Welcome into the official Jets podcast. Eric Allen joined by Lejay Douzeball. Draft week is here, dudes. It's upon us.
Can you believe it, EA? I mean, I feel like the season ended maybe a month ago, right? I feel like, you know, the Super Bowl in Vegas was right, like literally yesterday. And now here we are. Look at us. Already ready for the new era of players to come into the brotherhood of the NFL, man. Time flies. Time flies, EA.
Time certainly does fly. And this is our last pre-draft podcast with Deuce, and we're putting you on the clock for the New York Jets. The Jets have seven overall selections, Deuce, yep. Starting with number 10 overall. Before we get to those picks, how did you go about targeting players for the Jets' needs this spring?
Yeah, so I went back and forth, and I actually do this exercise where I think, and I run down like what teams or who they could potentially pick before the Jets actually pick. So it was like a real exercise. So when you look at this draft, it's based on, you know, going through, you know, each round, seeing what player may or may not be there. More specifically in first round, right? I looked at the first nine picks and did, you know, some evaluation of what teams could potentially trade up for the quarterbacks at the top of the draft, what teams need have certain needs at certain positions, and that's how I was able to make my pick at number 10. And then even going down to the third round, right, just going through the draft, seeing what player could possibly be there. So that's how, like I said, it's I don't want to say it was tedious because I love going through this exercise because this is probably – EA, what, my 10th mock draft, right? So it gets fun every time when you just, you know, decipher who could potentially be there, what team has a need, and how they try to fill it, as opposed to what the Jets are going to need at that certain pick.
All right, we control the cards. So we could do this different than what's going to happen on draft weekend.
Correct.
It goes sequentially in order. Do you want to lead up to number 10? Should we start backwards? Should we start all the way from Mr. Irrelevant, or you want to do this traditional style?
Let's do a traditional style.
Okay, fine. All right. Here we go. Number 10 overall. Who did you consider here before you put in the card?
Well, yeah, I don't believe it's a secret anymore. My affinity for Rome Odunze, but in this mock, he was already gone. So unfortunately, he was not there at the number 10 pick for the Jets. So I went back and forth to see best player available, best fit, right? And that's how I came up with who I picked at the number 10 spot.
All right. So who was on the board? Who were some names that Jets fans like? Who was on the board before you picked this a certain Pac-12 alum?
Yeah. Brock Bowers was still on the board. Okay. J.C. Latham was still on the board. And Talese Fuaga was still on the board.
Okay. Lejay Douzeball, you are now on the clock with the number 10 overall selection.
We're out in the war room. We're all discussing what we should do. Who's, you know, on our board at this number 10 spot. And when it came down to it, I went with Troy Fontenot, the offensive tackle from Washington. When you look at how he would fit in the Jets' plan, right, this is a guy that has position flexibility and versatility. He could start at guard or at tackle. But I think he's athletic enough, EA. He could really start at tackle. And, yes, I know the Jets brought in Tyron Smith. They traded for Morgan Moses, but both of those guys are in their mid-30s, and we've seen the issues the Jets have had at the tackle position staying healthy. So why not have a guy with the versatility to essentially almost start every spot on the offensive line if somebody were to go down? Because you got to think, in this day and age in the NFL, 17 games, EA, somebody most likely is going to get dinged up, right? Somebody's going to have to come in and spot start. And what better player than Troy Fontenot, a guy, like I said, the athletic ability to stay at tackle, but I believe can play guard at a high level as well. Kind of reminds me of AVT when he came out, right? And he's a guy that's been able to, you know, go from tackle to guard, guard back to tackle. Hopefully this year he can solidify himself at guard and just stay at guard. But I think Troy Fontenot, to beef up that offensive line, makes the most sense at pick number 10.
Interesting dude. He played defensive line in high school, number Correct. Two overall recruit out of the state of Nevada, played in Nevada high school ball, so he knows Rome Odunze from way back when, got his degree in real estate, started every game each of the past two seasons. Okay, I like this kid as a prospect.
Yep.
You've been saying for weeks, you've been standing on the table, well, probably months, Jets got to go receiver here because it's more of a need. Why ultimately, you said the top three receivers were off.
They were so gone. With that be,
okay, why no Bowers?
Well, when you look at positional value, and we've had this discussion, EA, Brock Bowers, I think, is a hell of a player. I don't want people coming after me in my DMs and everything thinking I have something against Brock Bowers. That's simply not true. I think he's a hell of a player. But for people that are saying you can't just treat him like a tight end, they said the same thing about Kyle Pitts in Atlanta, and that still hasn't worked out to this day. They were literally comparing Pitts to a unicorn. EA, because that's essentially what he was. He was a freak athlete, just like Brock Bowers, explosive in the open field, just like Brock Bowers. But if you don't have a set plan for a guy with that type of skill set, it isn't worthy of a top 10 pick, and it usually doesn't work out. I know I was on Twitter the other day, or X, or whatever you want to call it, EA, and I was saying, Dalton Kincaid, like, you know, he's kind of comparable to Brock Bowers, and people kind of got after me, and I would say, I think Bowers is a better athlete, right? Yeah. And he probably blocks a little bit better. But I said this year, Dalton Kincaid in Buffalo, I saw some dog in him blocking that I didn't see at Utah. So a lot of it has to come with coaching or what they ask him to do at Utah. Sure. So if Brock Bowers has a season like Dalton Kincaid had, it's a good season, but it's not a good season if you're a top 10 pick, right? Because you got to think about it. Garrett Wilson was a top 10 pick and went over 1,000 yards his rookie year. Dalton Kincaid, I believe, had 73 catches for right under 700 yards, which is a quality year for a tight end. But if you're going in the top 10, people are going to say that's a bad year for him. So, like, why would you put that kid in that predicament? To me, yes, I know Brock Bowers is a weapon X, if you would like to say that, but he's still a traditional tight end. He can line up at the traditional tight end spot. You can line him up in the backfield. You can split him out. But most tight ends in the NFL are doing that today anyway, EA.
So why Big Troy over Fuaga and also over Latham?
I just think the position flexibility. Now, Fuaga can play guard as well, but I think he's more penciled in as a right tackle and a guard, where Troy Fontenot could play right tackle, left guard, right guard. And I dare say he may be even able to play center as well. So I just thought with the position flexibility, and even though the Jets have a starting five offensive line, why not get a guy that you know is versatile enough to play every spot on the offensive line if somebody were to get dinged up, and not just play at a high level as well at those positions? So it was tough, EA. I went back and forth between him and Fuaga because Olu Fashanu and Joelle were already off the board, right? So, like, I went back and forth between those two. I just thought as far as position flexibility, Troy Fontenot made a lot more sense.
Okay, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but you play your best five. You talked about the Jets' additions in the offseason. If you take Fontenot, number 10 overall, will he ultimately be a day one starter for you when you're opening the season up in 2024?
And that's the question mark, EA. And I think Joe Douglas did a masterful job in the contracts that he did with trading for Morgan Moses, who doesn't have a high cap number. Same thing with Tyron Smith. So if Troy Fontenot comes in and he's ready, he's the starter. And Morgan Moses, or dare I say even Tyron Smith, would be your swing guy. And the crazy thing is, they're technically getting swing tackle type money anyway, right, EA, when you look at and break down their contracts for this last year. So to me, if Troy Fontenot comes in and proves that he's one of the best starting fives, you start him. Like, that's what it is. And now, let's not forget, Morgan Moses in 21, when he came to the Jets, he was essentially supposed to be the swing guy. Yeah, people forget that. Mekhi Becton got hurt in the first half versus Carolina, and that's why Morgan Moses went on to start for the rest of the season, right? Because George Fent was dealing with some injuries as well. But Mekhi Becton going down solidified Morgan Moses in the starting lineup, and he just never looked back. So Morgan Moses is used to being in this predicament. So I think this would be something that, of course, as a player, you want to be out there and start. But if they asked him, you know, Morgan, we need you to be the swing guy, and there's probably a high percentage chance you're going to play this year because we just know how the NFL works and guys get dinged up, I think Morgan Moses would be up for that.
Troy Fontenot goes number 10 overall to the Jets. Okay, dudes, you are on the board. You had to wait out round two, but it is Friday night. It is round three. It is selection time. Pick number 72 for the New York Jets.
Drum roll. Silky smooth Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver from Florida. I love this kid's game. Smooth route runner, does a good job tempoing his routes. And when I say tempo, he gives you different cadences. That way you essentially don't know what route he's going to run. People talked about his speed and worried about his speed. He ran a sub 4.5, I think a low 4.41, if I'm not mistaken. And you see it on film, right? He took an end around versus Mizzou, 30 plus yards. And EA, if you look at that Missouri defense, it's going to be like five or six guys selected in this draft. So that's a top-notch defense. And he outran all of them to the end zone. So Ricky Pearsall, we know that there needs to be a receiver taking in this draft to pair with Garrett Wilson. Yes, we know Mike Williams was a big signing in free agency, but he's coming off a major knee injury, right? So it'll give you the flexibility, even though Pearsall is a slot receiver, it'll give you the flexibility to move Garrett Wilson from the outside to the inside. Pearsall can play on the outside, but he does a lot of his damage in the slot. So in the third round, I think it makes a lot of sense, especially if you go O-line in the first, to rectify, you know, the receiver room by getting a guy who a lot of people see could be a second round pick. But if he slides to the third, I think you run that card in, especially if you go O-line in the first round.
Okay, why is he there in round three? You mentioned it before. Is it because of size and speed concerns? And with that being said, I really like this kid's production. Last year at Florida, you're talking about 65 catches, 965 yards. He had the four touchdowns last season, 150 career receptions. A transfer from Arizona State.
Arizona State has some players.
Yeah, you know what? He was part of the recruiting class that included Jaden Daniels, who could go number two overall in this draft. Do you think talk about some of the concerns, maybe, and why he's sitting there in round three?
People slotted him as a slot guy. So slot guys usually go down lower in the draft. And then, yeah, we talked about this being one of the deepest receiving classes, which means other positions will get pushed up in the draft. And you could see some receivers that are second-round receivers drop into the third and third-round receivers drop into the fourth because teams feel like, I can still get a quality receiver later on in the draft. Let me go attack a need that I have in another position group that isn't as strong. So that's a lot of times what you see in these drafts with, you know, the offensive line being so deep and the receivers being so deep. A lot of those guys, like even a guy like Jordan Morgan, who I have slated to go at the end of the first round, he may slide into the second just because this is a deep offensive line class and teams that have needs in other positions. If there's a premium player there, you're gonna make an emphasis on trying to go get that player because that position group is not as strong and it may be harder for you to answer that void later on in the draft. So I think this is just, you know, a component of Ricky Pearsall being in a really deep receiver class. Again, he could go at the end of the second round, but I got him here at the top of the third.
Hey, dudes, what do you think about him being on the all-nickname team? Slick Rick, you like
Slick
that?
Rick. I like Slick Ricky Pearsall. Probably had the best catch in college football all last year versus Charlotte, going up against his body, one hand snagging the ball out of the air. So he has really good hands. Again, a really good route runner. Temples his routes really well to be able to shake free. There is one concern. In press man, sometimes he struggles to get off press. So that could be another reason why he may slip a little bit lower.
Okay. I like that selection myself. I am a former Gator. So bringing in here a Florida alum. Okay, so the Jets have a pair of seasoned veteran quarterbacks at the top of their depth chart in Aaron Rodgers, Tyrod Taylor. But, hey, did you like what you heard from Joe Douglas the other day? He said he wants to build a quarterback factory here. I started thinking to myself, hey, Jets, they're going to be adding a quarterback here on day three. And for you, no surprise, go signal caller here in round four.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think every team every year should take a look at a quarterback, right? Just because, for one, if you're able to develop that guy, he's a trade chip later on. And two, you just never know what's going to happen with your starting quarterback. So I took a flyer here in the fourth round and one of my favorite prospects in the draft, Michael Pratt, the quarterback from Tulane. I mean, to me, throws with the most touch in this draft class. Now, he doesn't have the biggest arm, EA, right? And sometimes struggles with them throws deep down the field outside the numbers. But you talk about a leader, a three-time captain, right? Knows how to win. People tend to forget last year against USC in the Cotton Bowl, he put on a display versus them and put up over 50 points against USC. Now, again, that's not a really good defense, so I'm going to preface it by saying that. But nobody gave Tulane a chance in that game. He's an ultimate leader, a heck of a competitor. EA, they put this guy in the run game, right? So, like, people don't talk about his athletic ability. They use him in the run game, and you see the toughness and grittiness when he runs with the football. He's a guy that people just rally around. I think he's a perfect fit to come in, sit behind Tyrod Taylor and Aaron Rodgers for 2 years with the opportunity maybe in 2 years to take over as a starting quarterback for the New York Jets.
So let's stay right there. Deuce takes Michael Pratt out of Tulane with the first of two fourth-round selections for the Jets. That's number 111 overall. You actually do see starting potential in this guy, even though Pratt, he sees the field really well. People say he's calm in the pocket.
Correct.
Very poised. And also, like you mentioned, the toughness factor, not afraid to run it, very smart, cerebral. With his athletic maybe limitations, you still see a potential NFL starter here.
I do, and I've always been higher on Michael Pratt than a lot of people. I mean, starting this process, I had him as a late second round pick, and then I moved him into the third. So I would not be surprised if a team even tried to get him in the third round. I know a lot of people will say on day two, it's probably going to be maybe Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, and I think Pratt was that third guy that could potentially slide into the third, and if not, he's most likely going to be the first quarterback taken in the fourth round, and good for the Jets to have a pretty high fourth round pick if he's able to be there. I think it just makes sense as a developmental guy for a year or two, most likely 2 years, sit behind Rodgers, sit behind Tyrod Taylor. And I think he has starting potential. I talked about it again, the way he's able to elevate his team at Tulane, back-to-back years going to the American Conference Championship game. And if you look at what he did this year without having his number one receiver, Jaquan Jackson, who's probably going to be a third round receiver for most of the year, he still led them to the American Conference Championship this year.
Yeah, so it's not fair of me to say, hey, this guy's not athletic. He's completely athletic. I'm just saying, hey, maybe he doesn't have the arm strength of a Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers, but at the same time, who does? Yeah. This guy brings a lot to the table. He's a multi-sport star in high school, a 4.0 GPA guy. You mentioned the leadership intangibles, so he definitely is going to be a name to watch on day three of the draft. The Jets have two fourth-round selections, so with pick number 134 overall, where are you going?
I went at the defensive tackle position because if you look at how that room is constructed right now, besides Quinnen Williams, everybody else is on a one-year deal. Right, Javon Kinlaw, one-year deal. Solomon Thomas, Fotu, one-year deal. I went with Mekhi Wingo, who fits perfectly in the system as an attacking defensive tackle three technique that can help you with interior pass rushing. People will say he's a little undersized, but if you turn on the film, he stays up in there, EA, at the point of attack against double teams because he is undersized. He has great leverage, and he can get up under blockers. But talk about first-step quickness. That is what Robert Saleh likes with his defensive linemen. He wants them to have that first-step quickness to be able to create havoc in the backfield. We know that this defense is run by the defensive line. Like, the defensive line helps with everything else at linebacker and in the secondary. So you can never have enough of those guys in rotation. And again, I would like for the Jets to finally draft somebody that can grow with Quinnen Williams, that can learn from him, and eventually maybe even become a starter next to him. I think this is a sweet spot right here in the fourth round to take a defensive tackle.
He started his collegiate career at Missouri, finished up at LSU. Yep. Most of the time with the Bayou Bengals, he's playing three tech. Is that where you think he's going to play on the next level as well?
Well, the thing about the LSU defense, it's a hybrid defense. They do a mixture of 4-3-3-4, and you see him sometimes as a head-up nose. So I think he can play the one technique as well, especially in this system where it's a more attacking system with the Jets. It's not like he'll be in there, you know, taking on 600 or 700 pounds. Like, if he's doing that, the linebacker's got to go, and that's how this defense is bred. So I believe he can stay at the one technique or the three technique. And with Robert Saleh's defense, both of the D tackles are interchangeable. You got to be able to play both. I think Mekhi Wingo can do both.
I like that people rave about his competitive nature. He was also a team captain. Yep. You played the position. When people say short arms, what's the thought process and what are you looking for on film?
Well, you look at it two ways, right? Because this defensive tackle group, I've been saying this, I think they haven't gotten enough respect for what they do. And I think it's just because of the thought process of what you're talking about, EA. People talking about short arms, shorter build guys. But if you look at the evolution of where the NFL has gone, it's kind of become that at the defensive tackle position. When you look at guys like, you know, Aaron Donald, who was a shorter defensive tackle, right? But yep. still had great strength at the point of attack. When you look at this draft, the guys like Braden Fisk, Mekhi Wingo, even Byron Murphy, they're not the biggest guys, right? But they're very explosive in their lower half. And the thing about it is, EA, they've had short arms their whole life, so they've had to adapt to that. Now, on film, sometimes you do see them struggle disengaging quicker because they can't get that extension because their arms aren't as long. But these, again, these are guys that have been playing with that deficiency their whole life, if that's what you want to call it, a deficiency. To me, I think that's what keeps a chip on their shoulder, because everybody's telling them, you know, you got shorter arms, you struggle, you know, we wonder, can you stay up in there in the double teams? Can you disengage and get off blocks and make plays on the running backs? And both, all the guys that I talked about have been able to do that on film. So yeah, you worry about a guy maybe disengaging quick enough to, you know, get off a blocker and make a play on a running back. But again, these guys have all been deficient in that area their whole lives, and yet they've still been able to make plays.
All right, so Mekhi Wingo goes to the Jets with the second of four of their two fourth-round selections. Let's move into round six now, Deuce. You've been talking about the need for the Jets to add a safety. Now, that was prior to Ashton Davis re-signing. Correct. With taking that into account, you still think the Jets could make a play here for that position on day three?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the depth still isn't strong at the safety position. And yeah, we talked about this before Ashton came back to the Jets and signed the one-year deal. I thought this was a higher priority. I took a safety in the third round, and people looked at me crazy. And I was like, have you seen the depth or lack thereof on the roster right now? How could you look at me crazy for taking a safety in the third round, knowing that Jeff Ulbrich and Robert Saleh like to use three safeties in their defensive sets at times? Like, I don't understand it. So I still took a filler on one, Evan Williams, who I believe is a really good in-the-box safety. EA, this guy will hit you. I mean, he will hit you. So he's going to fit in that mold that Robert Saleh and Jeff Ulbrich really like. Now, I wouldn't put him in the middle field safety. You know, that's why we have Tony for it. Tony does a really good job being that middle field, half field safety, but a guy that's going to be an enforcer in the box. And then Ashton Davis is a combination of the two. He can do both. I think Chuck Clark is a guy that can do both, but is more of an in the box safety guy. And let's not forget, he's coming off a major knee injury. Even though it was earlier in the offseason last year, you would assume that he's going to be ready. You just never know how these things are going to respond. So I think he's a great developmental safety that could eventually turn into your third safety.
You were down in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl, like you are every year. How much did he impress you during that week? And maybe during that time, Deuce, does he make a transition from probably, hey, this guy could be an undrafted dude, maybe a priority free agent, to, oh, no, he's going to go on day three now?
Yeah, I think he solidified himself in day three, especially at the Senior Bowl. You saw what you saw on tape at Oregon, how he flies around to the football, right? It jumps off on tape. And again, you know the mantra for the Jets, all gas, no brakes. You have to have that type of mentality when you're playing in a Jeff Ulbrich, Robert Saleh defense. So when I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I saw him flying around, and even saw him, you know, cover better than I thought I would see him, because on film, you saw some struggles there at times when he's in open space trying to cover in zone. He did a little bit better job in Mobile, but I really like him as an in-the-box guy. I think that's where he'll flourish. And I think he'll flourish on special teams as well.
Great point about special teams. Last point here, he was an effective blitzer last year at Oregon, wasn't he?
That's why I like him in the box, like bringing him off the edge. We see from time to time now, Jeff Ulbrich doesn't major in blitzing just because our defensive line can get after you with just four. But when he does blitz, whether it's bringing Quincy Williams off the edge or even Whitehead when he was here, sometimes bringing him, you know, through the middle of the defense or off the edge, like Evan Williams is a guy that can come off the edge and get to the quarterback.
All right, LeJay Dusable, we have some breaking news right now on the podcast. How about that?
Wow.
You never know when a trade is going to happen. And reports are the Jets made their second trade of the offseason involving 2024 draft picks on Monday, sending quarterback Zach Wilson and a seventh-round pick. Wow. Number 256 overall to the Broncos in exchange for a six-rounder, number 203. Before we get to 203 here on the mock draft,
What are your thoughts of the deal and Zach Wilson going back to the Mountain West?
Yeah, we kind of knew this was coming down the pike, EA. Zach Wilson, you know, up and down career with the Jets. And you assume when the Jets signed Tyrod Taylor as the backup quarterback for Aaron Rodgers that there was going to be some business that was going to be done. We know Zach Wilson wasn't with the team at the start of the offseason program. So I think this is a win-win, honestly, for both teams, right? Because sometimes as a player, you just need a fresh start, EA. And you talked about it, right? He's going back to the Mountain West, closer to his family. You would hope that, you know, maybe with Sean Payton, they can get the best out of his talent. He was the number two overall pick, and maybe he'll be a little bit more comfortable closer to family. So just was Zach Wilson the best? Didn't work out here with the Jets, right? So I think this was best needed for both teams, not just, you know, the Broncos, but as far as Zach Wilson and the Jets for him to start anew.
Bottom line, the writing was on the wall as soon as the season ended. And also, just from the perspective of this guy being someone who used to walk the halls here at One Jets Drive, like you said, you hope that he is able to get his career on track in Denver. And sometimes people just need new opportunities and a new place to start their career.
Correct.
Yep.
Perfect example. Geno Smith went through the same thing here with the New York Jets, was able to go to the Giants and Chargers, then he found his home with the Seattle Seahawks. And look at him now, right? Pro Bowl quarterback just a year ago, played really well last year when he was healthy. Now he's going to be a starter for his third year in a row. So sometimes you just need a fresh start in a new environment, and hopefully you can, you know, channel some of that talent that you had that made you such a high draft pick. And again, just wishing nothing but the best for Zach Wilson as he moves forward with the Denver Broncos.
Hey, wouldn't it be something if he's the starter when the Broncos actually come to the Jets next season? We'll have to see how this all unfolds.
That is what's crazy. Because if you look at it and you look at the current roster, I think the biggest thing with Zach, people always wanted him to be able to sit behind a veteran and learn. Yep. But what if he goes out in Denver and balls, ends up being a starter? Because they do have the number 12 pick, but I think it's high for a quarterback in this draft, depending on who actually falls there. So they could potentially maybe try to trade back and get a guy in the second round. But either way, like, Zaka has a good opportunity to kind of rewrite his history in Denver. And like you said, wouldn't it be poetic justice, right? If the Denver Broncos, when they come to town, Zach Wilson is a starting quarterback.
Listen, it's possible. It certainly is possible, because you're talking about that Broncos quarterback room right now. The most proven guy there, you would say, is Jared Stidham.
I would say maybe Zach Wilson, honestly.
Wilson definitely has more experience, but I don't know. As far as like a depth chart is concerned, I don't know if right now Sean Payton would put Stidham first or Wilson.
No, Stidham would be the starter for sure.
Yeah, right.
For sure.
Yeah. Definitely more experience. So he gets a fresh start. The Jets have two veteran quarterbacks in your mock draft. You have already taken that developmental passer from Tulane for the New York Jets in the fourth round, but you're up to the sixth round with the 203rd overall selection. Now the Jets pick who?
Offensive tackle Tylan Grable from UCF, a developmental tackle that's very athletic. I believe he ran in a sub 5.40 at the combine. So you see the athletic ability there. Was a East and West guy, had a really good week in the East and West game. And he's a guy that, with his athletic ability, does a really good job of cutting guys off in the backside. The one thing that may be a concern, he's not the biggest guy, EA. He's only about 300, 305 pounds. And sometimes speed to power can be an issue for this guy, but has really good footwork, right? Has times up, you know, his punch really well on opposing defenders. So he's a guy I think could be a really good developmental guy, and maybe even down the stretch be a swing guy for you.
Yeah. Where did he go to school?
I think he went to the best university in the land, EA, UCF.
UCF.
And this has no bearing on me picking him here in the sixth round.
The University of Central Florida, where one LeJay Dousabaugh also played college football.
This is correct. Hey, but again, this has no bearing, because we saw earlier in my draft, I took Ricky Pearsall in the third round, where I could have took Javon Baker, and I didn't.
Former college quarterback here.
Yeah.
Interesting backstory, and you find a lot of those there late in the draft, which leads us to Mr. Ooh. Irrelevant, number 257 overall. Last but not least, here's the guy who's going to have a parade, I think. They have this whole big setup in Newport, California, following the draft. So as opposed to signing a priority free agent, the Jets are going to select who here?
I'm going to go to the great state of West Virginia. No, not the University of West Virginia, EA. I'm going to go to Huntington, West Virginia. Marshall, their running back, Rasheen Ali. I love this kid's game. He is a guy that has a lot of patience behind the line of scrimmage. Is also a really good pass protector. And we know, EA, a lot of rookies struggle when it comes to that coming into the league. He's a guy that will fit it up there and block blitzing linebackers really well. I think he'll be a really good developmental guy that has a chance to make this team on special teams and potentially help you out on some third downs with protections.
Shout out to Dane Brugler, who puts together the beast every year as far as his breakdowns on all the college prospects. This guy has an interesting background, the running back from Marshall, doesn't he? Because he grew up in Cleveland. His dad Yep. owned and operated a gym. His production at school, off the charts, got in the end zone a lot, Legere. I think it was 15 touchdowns Yep. last year. One thing you want to see him work on at the next level, ball security, right?
For sure. And you alluded to some of the great things about him. He's a finisher in the red zone. He's a tough physical runner, right? He's going to get across that goal line. But you talked about it, the ball security. He'd probably be a little bit higher up on this draft board if it wasn't for that. He does tend to every once in a while lose that ball. So that's something that you can hope will be developed with coaching. And this is a perfect spot to take him as Mr. Irrelevant. And hopefully the Jets can develop this guy. And he could be a really good back and also, again, help you out on special teams.
All right. So what do you think about Legere Douzeboul's 2024 New York Jets draft class? Starting with the headliner, Troy Fatanu out of Washington with that number 10 overall selection. You go to Florida and take Ricky Pearsall with the third round selection, Slick Rick. Michael Pratt, the developmental quarterback there in the Yep. fourth round. Mekhi Wingo, defensive tackle out of LSU, a really nonstop motor, a guy who produced and could come in and you think fit in quite well with the Jets' loaded defensive line. Evan Williams, a hard-hitting safety from Oregon Yep. who was all over the field. You project him as a box safety. Grable, your fellow UCF alum, of course, a guy, developmental prospect in the sixth round. And then finally, Rasheen Ali out of Marshall. The Jets have a top-flight running back in Breece Hall. We like what we saw out of Izzy Abanaconda last year, but you could use some depth in that offensive backfield as well.
Yeah, I really love this class. And again, just depending on the scenario, in this scenario, the top three receivers were gone. The top two offensive tackles were gone. I could have went to Lees Fuaga, who a lot of people say GM Joe Douglas has an affinity for. But I went with Fatanu just because of the position flexibility. I think he can maybe even play center as well. I think that's how talented this kid is. And we know in the NFL, guys get banged up. We got two starting tackles. They're in their mid-30s. One's coming off a torn pec surgery, and the other one hasn't had a complete season, I think, in the last 4 years. He's missed some time in Tyron Smith. So you have Fatanu who can slide in there. And then even at guard, right, AVT has had to deal with some injuries. If something were to happen to him, Fatanu could slide right in at guard, and you wouldn't miss a step.
I like what you did here in terms of positional need. Because the Jets didn't have glaring needs going into this draft, but they pick up an offensive Yeah. lineman who you really like his versatility. Then they get a receiver. That's a group you have to add to. Obviously, after this trade of Zach Wilson, you got to get a developmental quarterback in the building. You've been talking about these defensive tackles who are going to line up adjacent to Quinnen Williams, but they're all on short-term deals. Then safety, you've been talking about depth at that position for a long time. Grable is another offensive lineman. Joe Douglas wants to continue to add there to the trenches. And we saw the Jets play 13 different offensive line combinations, I think 16 offensive linemen in all. And then finally, Ali is a guy who could battle to make this roster and potentially help on special teams.
Yeah, exactly. I like you said, the positional value and where I took guys in regards to needs. Again, you would like to get one of the top three receivers, but it didn't pan out that way in this draft scenario. You get a really good offensive lineman who has the versatility to play multiple positions. And then in the third round, our guy Slick Rick Pearsall, right? A guy that's one of the best slot receivers in this league. Now, he can play on the outside as well, but he does a lot of his damage in the slot. One of the best route runners in this draft. Does a really good job going up and getting the football as well. And does have speed, even though people question that. I believe he ran a 4.41 at the combine. And I've been saying for the longest that there needs to be a defensive tackle that can grow with Quinnen Williams. And that's why I took Mekhi Wingo, because if you look at everybody else besides Quinnen Williams, they're all on one-year deals, EA. And then with the trade to Zach Wilson, you heard GM Joe Douglas said, we would love to be a quarterback factory. So why not take a swing at a developmental guy in the fourth round of Michael Pratt, who I think will fit right in with that quarterback room, a proven leader and winner that throws with a lot of touch. He can sit and learn behind two really good vets in Tyrod Taylor and also Aaron Rodgers. And then the back of the draft, we took Evan Williams, who will help you out on safety on special teams, but a guy I think eventually could be your number three safety, in the box safety. That's a great blitzer and a hard hitter and a tone setter in that secondary. Tylan Grabo, developmental tackle. And then Rasheen Ali will be a developmental running back. So I really love this class, EA.
I'm sure you do. It's yours.
It is my class. So, yeah.
Okay, so final thoughts here. We just went through your mock draft. But your thoughts on what's going ahead with the decisions that are going to be made for Joe Douglas and crew. What's going to happen at the top of the draft Thursday night?
So in talking about about the Jets, but literally what's going to happen with the draft and how it can, affect
how it's
going
to impact, bottom line, how's it going to impact what the Jets landscape looks like?
Yeah. So looking at the draft, I could see, it's almost inevitable that Caleb Williams most likely is going number one overall. You look at number two, I still think there's a strong belief that Jaden Daniels will go two overall. Just makes too much sense with Cliff Kingsbury being the offensive coordinator and looking at, Jaden Daniels' skill set. Just looks like a perfect marriage for those two guys. Honestly, at three, I think this is where the draft starts. I think the Patriots are going to trade out of three. Yeah. Honestly, I think they're going to trade because they just have so many holes on their roster right now. Why not try to trade back and get some more blue chip players? Because Jacoby Brissett has proven he can be a spot starter in this league and even win you games, right? So, I think, Coach Mayo, Gerard Mayo, has a lot of faith in Jacoby Brissett, and I believe that team does as well, where they take a filler on a quarterback probably in the second round.
Are you still circling Minnesota there?
Yeah, I think Minnesota trades up, depending on if they have enough capital to do it. Now, they do have two first-round picks this year. I think it would take two firsts this year and maybe even a third to move from 11 to 3. And if you're the New England Patriots, you try to see if you can get three firsts for them to move up, right? So I believe they have the draft capital to potentially move up, depending on what they want to do with picks in 2025, right? But they do have the two first-round picks this year because of the trade they made with the Houston Texans already. So when you look at that, I think Minnesota definitely, moves up, tries to get their quarterback. And I think it'll be Drake May at number three. If you just look at the history of Drake May, he was coached by Josh McCown in high school, who was the current quarterback coach for the Minnesota Vikings.
Would you be surprised if anyone other than Marvin Harrison Jr. goes 4 overall to Arizona?
No, that's not happening. Marvin Harrison Jr. will be the number 4 pick at Arizona.
Okay, so let's get to 5. Yeah. Harbaugh's starting his program there with the Chargers. Are you looking at them as a potential team that is going to look to add a bunch of assets and maybe potentially gets out?
Yeah, I think they're going to try to trade back if they can, just depending on how the first 3 picks go. Say Minnesota isn't able to make a trade happen with New England. I think New England actually takes Marvin Harrison at number 3 then, if that's the case. Just again, because they need so many, they have so many holes on their roster. Why not get a blue chip guy that could be your true number 1 receiver out in New England. So the Chargers, I think, will potentially try to trade out, and maybe that's a partner with the Minnesota Vikings if New England can't trade out. I think Arizona would be crazy to trade out if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there. Why not pair him with Kyler Murray? Now Murray has a true number one because they lost their number one and two receiver this offseason. So Michael Wilson's a nice young player. So I think Marvin Harrison goes four. Depending on what happens with the third pick, I think the Chargers either take Malik Nabers or Joe Alt or trade out.
Okay. So let's end here. Joe Douglas, at what point does he make a couple calls? And we've done multiple segments on this over the last few weeks. At what point do you make a call to go up? And at what point are you seriously considering moving back?
Yeah, so when you get to pick seven, right, you would assume that depending on if the Chargers take Joe Alt or Malik Nabers, if they don't take one of those two guys, the Titans are going to take one of those guys. Where I think we're kind of assuming at this point, because Joe Shane and Brian Daboll haven't been able to pick a quarterback of their own for the future, you would assume at number six, if they don't try to trade up, they're going to pick a quarterback at that spot, right? I know a lot of Giants fans will not love to hear that, but I'm just letting you know how football minds think. Every GM and every head coach want to be attached to a quarterback of their picking. Well, they haven't been allotted that favor because Daniel Jones was already there when both of those guys got there. So when you get to seven, again, if Joe Alt is there, if he's not, then you take Olu Fashanu, right? And then that's when, if you're the Jets, that's when you call up. Now, again, in this scenario, if the Chargers decide to go offensive tackle instead of receiver, now you're potentially looking at two of the top three receivers still there at pick eight. So if you're the Jets, you're sitting pretty right there, right? You're sitting pretty, pretty. The only thing is you worry about another team trying to call and jump you. That's the issue that the Jets have. So even regardless if there is two receivers still there in the top 10, I still would call Atlanta Falcons and see, because I think a lot of people assume they're going to take the first defensive player off the board, which would be Dallas Turner. Would they feel comfortable, you know, coming back just two spots, maybe giving up a fourth and a sixth round pick to move back two spots to still take their guy and have the Jets move up at eight? I think that's where it happens.
So you're circling number eight. Conversely, yep. I don't think the Jets actually do have a bad scenario, but what's the worst scenario where if you're Joe D, you're like, hey, I'm really looking to collect another two. I want more assets here. What happens at the top where you're seriously looking for a dance partner to get out of there?
Well, this could be the worst case scenario here. Say the top two tackles. Well, the scenario that I played for us, right? The top two tackles are gone. The top three receivers are gone. So at 10, who is going to be aggressive enough to move up for tackles when this is a deep tackle class? And if you're saying that Fashanu and all are the two blue chip left tackles, even though Fuaga and Fatanu are really good, and so were Tyler Guyton and Amarius Mims, well, you may feel like one of those dudes are going to fall to you. Do I need to give up draft capital to move up? That's the only issue. And that's why I did that exercise in our draft, right? Because that's literally the scenario the Jets could be in, where you most likely it's better for you to just pick at 10, because who's going to truly want to move up if a lot of those tackles, guys usually only move up for quarterbacks or your offensive tackles, right? Or top tier receivers. But if the top receivers are gone and this is a deep offensive tackle class, and say Fashanu Alt is only, are only like three or four spots from Fuaga, Fatanu, or, you know, Mims or Tyler Guyton, then if you're a team, you're like, I'm not trading up. One of those guys are going to fall to me. So that could be a scenario the Jets are in. Now you try to see if somebody wants to, you know, move up for, you know, who knows, maybe Brian Thomas. I don't see somebody moving up to number 10 for him, even though he's a really good player. But unless somebody like really loves Fuaga, that would be the only scenario. But we know, or we've heard, that Joe D has a, you know, affinity for Fuaga. So I don't know if he just doesn't turn that card in himself.
Well, the wait is almost over.
It's here.
The 2024 NFL draft is finally upon us. Hey, dudes, it's been so much fun previewing the draft over the last few weeks. We're going to break it down all next week. Why don't you tell folks where they can find you over the weekend?
Yeah, so I'll be on CBS Sports Network this whole week and throughout the weekend, and CBS Sports HQ, breaking down different draft scenarios, and during the draft, breaking down picks from everybody. So it's going to be a fun weekend. Again, EA, so many players worked their whole life and their dreams are finally coming true. So this is always a special time of year.
Special time of year. Great analysis. We will talk to you next week, brother.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate it, EA.